Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Maria Garcia.
Here comes a 1-2 pitch. Red Sox win the World Series!
That's the cue to get the duck boats ready. Boston Mayor Marty Walsh announced earlier today that the city will hold a championship parade for the Red Sox on Wednesday morning, starting at 11. Mayor Walsh also thanked fans for celebrating responsibly last night and pointed that in all the post-game euphoria, there was only one arrest. He encouraged similar behavior at Wednesday's parade.
Boston has certainly set a new tone around celebrations, and maybe it's because we have a lot of them, or maybe it's just because the way that we conduct ourselves. So again, I want to thank you all. We are a city of champions, so let's celebrate like champions.
The 2018 World Series title is the fourth Red Sox championship since 2004 and the 11th championship for Boston since 2001. For more, we turn now to Boston Globe sports editor Matt Pepin. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks for having me, Maria.
Of course. And also here with us, as he has been throughout this Red Sox run, is Radio Boston's own Chris Sitterick. Hi, Chris.
How's it going?
Good. And I need to paint the picture for our listeners. Chris came to work today in professional attire with his button-up shirt, but over it, you're wearing a Red Sox jersey.
You got to wear the colors, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So what a season this Red Sox team had. 108 wins in the regular season. The most wins ever by a Red Sox team, and now they're the World Series champs. I mean, how good is this team?
They're pretty good, huh, Matt?
They're excellent. I mean, it's the best Red Sox team ever.
Yeah, I think you got to put it into context and talk about the teams that the Red Sox went through to get to this title. You're talking about a 100-win Yankees team. You're talking about a 3-win defending champion Houston Astros. You're talking about a back-to-back World Series appearance Dodgers. Mm-hmm. Maybe the toughest slate of playoff opponents that we've seen on the way to a title. They get a ton of credit for that. They lost one game to Houston and then go on to win four straight to finish that series. And then you've got the game three on Friday, 18 innings to bounce back after that and win game four just says so much about their ability to overcome adversity.
Yeah, so it was a wild weekend, right? That started on Friday night with an 18-inning game three. Can you give us some perspective on that marathon game and how the Sox were able to basically bounce back after losing such a heartbreaker?
I'm going to let Matt start with that one because I can't imagine working in print journalism trying to cover a game that ends at 3:30. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, it was one of the most memorable nights of my career, without question. And it was, you know, it was really a challenge. You plan for the outer extremities of most games, which in the World Series you dictate about 4 hours for a game. And so for this to go 7 hours and 20 minutes created all kinds of issues. You know, from having to keep people here so late because we ultimately wanted to at least get some newspapers on the streets with the final score and a couple of extra stories. We wanted to have our website updated for those who didn't go stay up all night. So it meant a lot of people staying up late and, you know, and working until they were pretty bleary-eyed. But, you know, it's a committed group, so we just fought through. I think that the thing that made it so, I won't say easy to do, but certainly entertaining and interesting, was that the game was so compelling. It had so many plot twists that, you know, it was like they always say, you know, truth is stranger than fiction. I don't know that you could have written a script like that, you know, on your greatest day in Hollywood.
Yeah, it was unprecedented. You mentioned 7 hours and 20 minutes long. That's longer than the entire 1939 World Series. Is that one game. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And special shout out to Nathan Eovaldi, threw 97 pitches in relief in that game. That's a World Series record for a reliever. It's a guy who's coming out of two Tommy John surgeries on his arm. Incredible for him to put that much work in for this team.
Right. So both of you have basically already agreed that this is the best Red Sox team we've ever seen, right?
I would take a little bit of a bone of contention there on that.
Okay.
They're up there. I think that they're up there with the 04 Sox. Just if you look at the getting the monkey off your back aspect. Without that 0-4 team, who knows what happens to the Red Sox franchise. Maybe top to bottom, this is a deeper team. But if you're talking about Pedro, Curt Schilling on the mound, you're talking about Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz as maybe the greatest 1-2 hitting combo of all time, I think it's close between this team and the 0-4 team.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the individual players, though, and the individual efforts. So Steve Pierce was the World Series MVP. He's not exactly a household name. What can you tell us about his performance and how he was able to be basically such a difference maker?
Oh, I totally had him pegged as the MVP. How about you, Matt?
No, not at all. No, he's but, you know, it seems like every year in the World Series, there's always this player who rises to the occasion. You know, it's always, you know, the stars are what they are, and they do what they do. But you know, part of being on a team is having the right people in place, and I think that's what happens. You know, we're about to publish a story today that you know, talks about all the things behind the scenes with this team and how they developed the kind of chemistry that made them so committed to each other and so, you know, relentless in the pursuit of their goal. And I think that, you know, a lot of times when you take a journeyman like Steve Pierce and you put him into that kind of environment, you know, the connection is made and it lights a fire. There's something to be said for, you know, being in a good work environment. Being in a good work environment leads to productivity. And I think that's what we saw over the course of the playoffs, where he was a tough out at the plate and certainly a reliable fielder who, you know, who also had a lot of great plays in the field as well. Some of his stretches at first base, I think, were, you know, flew way under the radar when compared to his accomplishments at the plate.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. He went 4-for-12 with 8 RBI for the World Series, and actually the first World Series MVP to play 50 games or less for his team. He was traded for in late June, and it was kind of a minor trade. Nobody talked much about it. He was brought in to hit left-handed pitching, which the Red Sox had been terrible at to start the year, and boy, did he deliver on that front.
Yeah, definitely. He was, you know, not much was made at the trade deadline of Dave Dombrowski's moves, but the players he did bring in ended up having a very significant impact. Steve Pierce one and Nathan Eovaldi the other, for sure.
So this was Alex Cora's first season as manager for the Red Sox. How much credit do you give him for this team's success?
Oh, the guy with the golden touch? Honestly, Matt, I don't know about you. I've never seen a manager be able to make so many correct decisions. It seemed like everything he did, I'd be screaming for 1 second and say, oh, nope, you're right. Whatever you want. You got it, buddy.
I loved it during the series when he was making correct decision after correct decision, and everybody was either tweeting or expressing in some way. Man, they would love to have him go pick the numbers for the Mega Millions, because that's when the Mega Millions jackpot was over $1 billion. So I think that perception of him was widespread. But, you know, always I think there's something behind making those decisions, making the correct decisions. And he's a guy who really combines, you know, the best of modern baseball, which is to use analytics and all of the advanced metrics that we have to measure players' skills and abilities, with like the real old school baseball intuition. And I think finding that happy medium is something that Alex Cora does really well. You know, time and again, the players expressed how much they enjoyed playing for him. And that's not just because he informs them with, you know, when you face this pitcher, he's probably going to throw you a fastball first time out. It's because he trusts them to get the job done. And he explains the decisions with, you know, with metrics, but also with the right amount of, you know, sort of one-on-one attention that I think inspires confidence.
Yeah, his agent Scott Boras calls it Coralytics, which is, I think, a pretty good term. One thing I think that matters to players is accountability, and he's clearly a manager that believes in accountability. After game four, he was taking some criticism for not pulling the starter Eduardo Rodriguez in the sixth inning. Rodriguez ends up giving up a 3-run homer and put the Sox down 4-0. It looked troublesome at that point, but he stepped up and said, nope, that's my fault.
We felt the matchup was good for us, but, you know, that matchup is good for us when Eddie's fresh. And, you know, he's able to get that fastball up. I had Barnsey ready, and I was actually kicking myself for a few innings before the comeback.
So I think that goes a long way. He could have said, we didn't execute on the pitch. Instead, he says, that's on me.
All right. So you know I'm the arts and culture editor here at WBUR. So I have to ask a question this way. So our critic at large at Siegel wrote a piece today that says, if Shakespeare's The Merchant of Venice celebrates the question of mercy, then Cora's Red Sox celebrate the question of loyalty. Basically, he's saying Cora really stood up to talk radio pundits, to everyday fans who basically questioned his methods. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I wish I could quote some Shakespeare back for you, but instead I'm just going to say I think that for his first season he showed he has a real ability to both look at matchups, look at the numbers, which is such a big part of baseball in this modern era, but also to know his players, to know how to communicate to them and how to put them in the best spots to succeed.
So on the other side, Dave Roberts, the Dodgers manager, has been taking a lot of heat for some of his decisions in this series. Do you think he deserves the blame for the Dodgers loss?
I can't criticize Dave Rogers because of 2004, the steal. So, Matt, take this one.
Yeah, I'm reluctant to criticize Dave as well, just because I think that in the end, you know, managers can inspire a certain amount of confidence and present analytics and whatnot. But in the end, it's the players who are up at the plate with the bat and the players who are out in the field throwing the ball and catching the ball. So, you know, I think that there was, you know, the Dodgers were just overmatched by a superior team of, you know, players who hit well, players who fielded with almost near impeccability. We'll leave J.D. Martinez out of that for now. But I just think that the Dodgers really failed to perform. Granted, they ran up against an excellent, excellent baseball team that features the highest payroll in Major League Baseball. But you know, so to put it all on the manager, I think is unfair.
All right. Well, that's Matt Pepin, sports editor for the Boston Globe. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Radio Boston's Chris Sitterick. Chris, thanks for being here again with
great
your
to
Red
be
Sox
here.
Jersey.
Let's take the pass to the Super Bowl next.
All right. Stay with us. Coming up, one woman's journey to understand and choose race in America. I'm Maria Garcia. This is Radio Boston.